We all knew something was wrong with us. Now there's proof. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today, as usual, is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
We'll see how convincing the proof is at the end of our little 15-minute program here.
And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us at the beginning of the week. It's a new month, new week started. And boy, I'll tell you what, we've decided we're going to have a little series here because there's so much out there today in the hopper, and it's all directed at you and me and Chuck because we've noticed a trend, ladies and gentlemen. It seems that there's quite a bit of effort, time, money, research, and media attention being given to what's wrong with you and me. Before you stop and turn off the car radio or wherever you're listening to us, there is something wrong with you and something wrong with me, according to them. But according to us, I think the shoe's on the other foot. So what we're going to talk about, Chuck and I have been having a really good laugh over this one over the weekend and earlier this morning, is a article that was published over the weekend, and I found this from the British newspaper, The Daily Mail, and headlining, "If you don't believe in climate change, you must be sick. Oregon professor likens skepticism to racism." Chuck, did you realize that when we sat here on this program and we talked about how we have very serious doubts about the science behind global warming and climate change and the hysteria that's been generated by it, and we try to push back at it and show that the data is faulty and talk about the lack of intellectual honesty that many climate change proponents have and have been shown to have, we're actually being racist and possibly mentally ill.
Well, being someone who has been trained in recognizing logical fallacy, you're going to have to do an awful lot of convincing, and this person that we're going to discuss is going to have to provide an awful lot of concrete evidence to prove her point, because what I see happening here is attempting to draw a false association, which is a logical fallacy, and that is between somehow man-made climate change skepticism and racism. Seems to me that, in fact, the attempt to connect those two things is something of a non sequitur. And if you don't know what a non sequitur is, it's essentially a completely illogical response to a question.
Right. Basically, the words non sequitur means it does not follow. In other words, one thought doesn't follow the other one logically. In other words, you're saying that if the cat is orange, it must be Tuesday. That's kind of a non sequitur. But Chuck, yeah. Why is it that invariably, every time we're dealing with these issues, we always see that there are logical fallacies aplenty from the proponents of liberalism, from the proponents of climate change, from the proponents of Obamacare, from all of these avenues? It's as if they just can't help themselves.
Well, they think they can get away with it because they have PhD behind their name. And the fact is that in many of these cases, PhD simply means piled higher and deeper.
Well, that's true.
People sitting around handing each other degrees based on quote-unquote advanced work, for instance, the person we're going to be discussing, has done work on quote-unquote the social organization of denial. Well, what the heck does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. It's drivel, but it's really high-order drivel.
Yes.
And by high-order, I mean it's had tens of thousands, if not maybe millions, of taxpayer dollars thrown into a academic furnace, does nothing except give people like this professor from Oregon a living and little else.
Yes. Well, I was going to say, you know, just to share with folks, the person who we're talking about is Professor of Sociology, Kerry Norgaard, from the University of Oregon, who has put forth a thesis that says that cultural resistance, in her phrasing, to accepting humans as being responsible for climate change, quote, must be recognized and treated as an aberrant sociological behavior. In other words, what she's saying is, if you don't accept that global warming is true or climate change issues are true and that it's all caused by human beings and so they're evil and they should feel guilty, then there's something wrong with you. And those who have embraced that good mental health position of accepting climate change and accepting man's responsibility for the entire thing should treat you. They should put you under a microscope. They should treat you as an aberrant sociological behavior. You know, aberrant and sociological, Chuck, that is what you call a sociopath.
Yes, exactly.
In other words, someone who is so antithetical to the survival of the society that basically what she's doing, Chuck, in not so many words, is equating people who don't believe in climate change to serial killers.
Well, that's exactly what she's doing. Without saying so, that is the connection she's attempting to make. And again, to do so, she can't do anything but engage in a logical fallacy. Now, I'm sure she, in her papers, which we have not read, thank goodness, and believe me, I have better things to do than to sit down and read a quote-unquote scholarly paper in this vein, because I've been forced when I was in college to read sociological papers. And let me tell you, as a trained hard scientist, this woman claims to be a fuzzy studies academic. Let me tell you, fuzzy is being charitable. There's nothing that even approaches anything like logical having to do, in most cases, with sociology. It's a non-science. They will tell you it's a statistical science rather than a hard science.
Mm-hmm.
It's not scientific in the slightest. It's essentially gathering a bunch of unrelated data, doing some fancy statistical analysis, and putting out a paper. And the bottom line is that I have never met or heard of a sociological law that had anything to do with reality. And I have never met a sociologist who was able to show me that any kind of study that they had done had any real impact on anything except applying arguments in favor of socialistic programs from the government.
Well, yeah, and that's very true. Now, Norgaard just keeps going here, and the reason why, ladies and gentlemen, we thought we'd bring this up to you, because we know the vast majority of people in our audience think rationally, clearly, and are not given to excitability or grasping on to extreme concepts when the media throws out, well, we're all going to die because human beings are making the earth too warm, and therefore the polar ice caps are going to melt, all the polar bears are going to drown, and New York City and San Francisco are all going to be underwater. We look at that and say, okay, show us the proof. And then when they start throwing out a bunch of dubious scientific statistics and studies, which if you just wait just a little bit, the other data will come in to show that they've extrapolated the data incorrectly, that they are doing this because they have grants, that they are trying to get more money for college. And they have a worldview agenda that says that human beings are the cause of all the woes. Folks who are advocating, like Professor Norgaard, that people who just don't accept human-caused climate change are sick, are dealing with it from their own particular worldview. They're also dealing with it from a position that they have to generate, well, specious data, that we find that if you wait just a little bit, then real data comes out behind it, basically disproving everything that the climate change alarmists, and I will call them the alarmists, because they are the alarming, that saying that climate change is a dead fact and anybody who opposes it, you know, must have a mental illness. But every time that the real data comes out behind one of their claims, you come to find out that they cherry pick and that data doesn't support their position. And as a matter of fact, the vast majority of times, it points the other direction, as we've talked about on this program before. But so here's Professor Norgaard, and basically saying, you know, okay, in the last 30 years, basically there's a resistance in our society to accepting the fact that humans are totally and solely responsible for the death of the planet, i.e. global climate change. And she said, now, in order for us to resolve the skepticism about it and to treat these people, it's going to be a challenge equal to overcoming, quote, racism or slavery in the U.S. South. Okay, so basically saying that those of us, and many in our audience who are rational and who don't believe in this radical climate change worldview, that we're basically like the old slaveholders, and it's going to take basically a war on us in order to get us to capitulate and to accept the fact of the new order, which is that we're all responsible and we should be controlled, restricted, guided, and severely governed by those who accept that argument that there is climate change.
Barry, one of the things you have to deal with when you deal with worldview style thinking, and that's what exactly what you're right. That's exactly what she's doing here. She is presenting her worldview. The problem being that she has presented her worldview as the only quote unquote acceptable worldview. In other words, all other worldviews should be outlawed, and those who don't hold my worldview should be sent to a re-education center. This is exactly what she's saying.
Well, you're exactly right, but they can even go farther than that.
Oh, well, as far as they're concerned, we're murderers.
Oh, absolutely. But she presented this paper of hers at the conference, Planet Under Pressure conference in London last week. She presented this paper, and the folks who put on the Planet Under Pressure conference have put out a statement calling for humans, that's you and me, ladies and gentlemen, to be packed into denser cities so that the rest of the planet can be surrendered to Mother Nature. As a matter of fact, a Yale University professor who was at this conference by the name of Karen Seto gave a quote to MSNBC and said, quote, "We certainly don't want humans strolling about the entire countryside. We want them to save land for nature by living closely together." Chuck, this is the agenda of the radical environmentalist worldview.
Exactly. The worldview involved here is that man is, the world was not made for man, which is part of the Christian worldview, and that man has dominion over it, but that man is an infection in the world and must be eradicated or at least controlled. And you're right, this is part of the radical left-wing environmental agenda, in which man is viewed as a disease on the planet, not as an integral part of everything, the way everything works on the planet. And the fact is, sorry folks, we're here. According to our worldview, the world was created for us, and we've been here since the beginning. And yes, that includes man walking the earth with dinosaurs, if you will. And as a trained scientist, yes, I do hold to that particular viewpoint. I realize that I'm flying in the face of most of my training and, in fact, would be drummed out of the core by other trained scientists. That's fine. Very often, we get things very wrong for a long time, and then suddenly, in a burst of in a very much a quantum change, everything changes all at once. That happened under Darwinism, and, of course, Darwinism now is the foundations have been crumbly for a long time. It is rapidly collapsing because the evidence simply is not there. Charles Darwin said within a few decades of his death, all the missing links would be filled in and his theory would be proven. Well, Charles Darwin died in 1850, in the 1880s. His book came out in 1859. And guess what? We are 130 years or so from his death, and we still don't have the geological or the paleontological evidence. So guess what, folks? Theory not proven. And in fact, you can't make one species turn into another one in the laboratory. It's been tried. All kinds of genetic pressure has been applied, and what you get when you do 50,000 generations of yeast, you can make it do all kinds of interesting things, but it's still yeast.
This is true.
You can make all kinds of genetic changes, and you still don't have a new species. You put that new species in with a wild type, and within three or four generations, it's that interesting new species that you created is back to wild type. There are so many problems that are connected to the old story about small changes over a long time. Like I said, thousands and thousands and thousands of generation of yeast in laboratory with all kinds of genetic pressure, and it's still yeast.
Indeed. Well,
so you know what? We're about out of time.
I figured we might be. But ladies and gentlemen, just join us again tomorrow for more principles and policies, because we're going to continue to tell you what's wrong with you. Hope you're here for our analysis.
join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.